Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Staff Draft, version 3.0, the final staff draft of the year. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined today by a fun crew. We got JJ Cooper on the call, we have Jeff Ponce on the call, and we have my draft podcasting duo, Peter Flaherty. We are about a couple weeks away from the draft and wanted to shake things up.
Not a couple of weeks, less than a couple of weeks.
Yeah, less than a couple of weeks when you guys see this. But we wanted to shake things up. We typically do a staff draft closer to the actual draft itself on the site. We wanted to do it live, kind of provide you guys with our rationale. So as you're listening to this or watching this on YouTube, the full staff draft is on the site. You can kind of watch along with our picks here. We've got the board up in real time. We've randomized the order. Jeff wound up with the first overall pick. We decided that if you get the first overall pick, you can choose if you want to flip that pick with any other spot, if you just prefer to pick somewhere else. But we're not going snake style, so I think it made sense that Jeff is starting with the number one overall pick. I'd actually talked to Jacob Rudner, who could not be on this call, and I wanted to have him decide who was going to be picking first by choosing our final staff draft teams from last year. But he's not here, and he also chose Ben's team, who also is not here, so we just randomized it. So I guess unless you guys have any other questions or any comments, we can kind of just fire this up and roll away. We're going to go through 40 picks. And Jeff, you are officially on the clock for the Nationals.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, in most draft situations across any kind of sport, real life, fantasy, the number one pick is more often than not really desirable. I did have second thoughts on swapping this pick or not because I almost feel like the player I might pick one could also go four. There's kind of this group of, you know, Holiday, Hernandez, Eli Willetts, and Cade Anderson who really seem to be the favorites in this group. I'm going to go with Ethan Holiday, a little bit more power, obviously, than Willetts, who's more of a hit tool guy. I think it fits my style a little bit more. And it's kind of in line with what Carlos has been thinking in a lot of his reporting. So I'm going to stick with Holiday there. He may not necessarily be my favorite player of that group or the safest, who I think is probably Cade Anderson. Mm-hmm. But I think the upside is there. And if the last, you know, 15 years of drafts have taught us anything, go after the guy with upside. So going with Ethan Holiday one.
Yeah, I like that pick. I was very curious to see if you're going to throw us a wild card right off the bat, but you got plenty more picks to throw some wild cards. This could definitely happen on draft day. And then Peter, we're going to you for pick number two.
Yeah, so full disclosure with how I'm picking, I'm not totally discounting the team that's picking, but I am more so picking like Team Flaherty and establishing a group. So in the spirit of that and trying to take all things into account, full disclosure, if I were picking at one, I would have taken Eli Willetts. But now that I have the second pick and also taking what the Angels might do into account, I'm going to take Cade Anderson.
Oh.
I've been beating the Cade Anderson SP1 drum. It feels like for a little while now, I've talked about him at length. No doubt starter. I think he's got a chance to headline a big league rotation one day. 3+ or better pitches and an above average one to round out a pretty deep arsenal. It strikes, its stuff, its projectability, whole lots of love.
Peter, I hate this pick because you've made my life more difficult and I really thought you were going to take Eli Willetts one. Go ahead, JJ.
Can I just add on this? Okay, over under, Angels take Cade Anderson too. Over under on number of starts that Cade Anderson makes in 2026 for the Angels. I'm going the over unders at like 19.
For the major league team?
Yeah, for the major league team.
I'll take the under on 19, but I do think he'll be in the majors before this time next year if he's the pick.
I'm with Los. Under 19, but I do think that if he goes to Los Angeles, I think he'll make his debut in 26.
Okay.
I think he'll make his debut in April or May of 26. That's why I say 19 is about the number. Like, he could obviously spend some time on the IL. Mm-hmm. They could shut him down late in the year. All these things could happen, but like, it's just hard for me to imagine if Christian Moore is, you know, came up like in May for them and we're like, man, that was a little slow for the Angels. Like, he came to spring training with competing for a job. Cade Anderson, I don't think is like, I do believe that the Angels will look around in spring training next year and go, this guy's better than most of our starters right now. And so there you go.
Well, and it's not out of the realm of possibility that he breaks camp with the team for 2 months and then gets jettisoned out to Tri-City to pitch in high A like Ryan Johnson or Victor Guerrero. Well, it's not just one example. We have multiple examples of them doing that. So yeah, if he's assigned directly to Rocket City, no pun intended, maybe pun intended, well, you know, Rocket's going off right there, right? Mm-hmm. Because he's not going to be a trash panda that long. That's typically a sign that he's going right up to the major league roster before he's ready.
Cool. Well, I'm up now for the Mariners at three. And I will say both the two players that I would have considered at number one are still on the board here. I really wanted Peter to take Eli Willits to make things easier for me. But I've talked too much about how much I like Seth Hernandez to not take him, especially
you got your guy.
Especially picking here for the Mariners, who does do such a great job with pitchers. I think this could potentially be a realistic scenario on draft day. I don't know that Hernandez is the most likely for them, but I do think Seth Hernandez has the most upside in the class. Any player, any position. I really was sorely tempted by Eli Willits and his well-rounded profile, but I got to go for some ace upside here with Seth Hernandez.
I will say with this that this, I feel like that this is kind of for the Rockies perspective would be kind of the, it's not a bad scenario, but kind of the worst case scenario here in some ways for that. Like obviously the dream scenario I think is for Ethan Holliday somehow to make it to four. I'm not just because of Matt Holliday's, long ties with the team and all that, but it sure doesn't hurt. But at the same time, also, I think Ethan Holliday would be a great fit for the Rockies. But I don't think that this is very difficult for me at four either. Like you talked about, there are other guys you could absolutely consider here, but I'm not looking at the college starting pitchers for the Rockies. Like I need impact guys. I need a guy who is going to be a cornerstone for a team that doesn't have a whole lot of cornerstones. So Eli Willits is the pick at four. I do think, that he just fits a lot of what they need. I mean, again, like I think that they would love to have Holliday. Mm-hmm. But Willits is absolutely a guy who you could consider at one, two, three, or four. And at four, great value.
I think it's interesting that when you talk about Eli Willits for the Rockies, you talk about trying to find an impact guy, because I do think that there are a lot of teams picking in this range who maybe would pass on Willits because there's not enough impact there. But I do think he has the most well-rounded profile in the class. I'm very bullish on his pure hitting ability. I'm very bullish on his athleticism and defense. So
What I would just note with that is like when I say impact, I don't want someone to think that I'm talking about he's got 70 grade power or something like that. But this is a team that could use a 280, 290 hitting middle infielder who plays good defense, who runs the base as well, who hits, gap power, but 10 to 15 homers. They don't have a whole lot of guys like that. Mm-hmm. That would be like immediately one of the best players on their team. But obviously we're a few years down the road for Willis being that. But
yeah,
this is a team that could use that.
All right, Jeff, you are up for the Cardinals, fifth overall.
Yeah, and it's funny. I'm kind of glad that JJ took Eli Willits. Not my favorite player in the class. I'm not a huge fan of Willits' profile personally, but he would have been such a great fit for the Cardinals organization. Mm-hmm. He's a lot like the players that they like to go after. So that makes my decision a little bit easier. I'm going to go off the board a little bit. I dug into the top five pitchers in the college class, all guys that are expected to go within the top 15. I actually came away really impressed by Tyler Bremner. And so Bremner is my pick right here. I love the fastball shape. I actually think, though it's not as hard as Doyle's and obviously not left-handed, a lot of ride, the best plane of any of these guys in the class, though I assume that backs up a little bit in pro ball from the West Coast Conference machines he was on. Great separation between the changeup and the four-seam fastball. And he throws his breaking stuff hard with enough spin that I do think in the right player development environment, there's maybe a better developed breaking ball there. I also have a little bit of confidence in Chaim Bloom taking over some of the mechanisms and the bones of that pitching development. A lot of the things that he did prior to leaving the Red Sox are now kind of coming to fruition within that group. So I think it's an interesting fit. Mm-hmm. If you told me you preferred Arnold or Witherspoon or Doyle, I think that totally makes sense. I really like the player with Tyler Bremner. I really like the fastball shape and the quality of that changeup. I think there's maybe two plus pitches there.
I knew you were going to be the first to take us off the board, Jeff, and I appreciate it. But I also think on draft day, there's going to be more landing spots up top in this range for Tyler Bremner than people might be assuming. I know a lot of the teams picking at the very top scouted him down the stretch. So whether it's on a deal or if it's just how you laid it out, Tyler Bremner's pitch mix, command, pitch shapes, his performance, it fits with all these guys in the top five. And I don't think if you're looking here at our board and seeing a nearly 10 spot separation between Anderson and Bremner, I don't really think the gap between them is that massive. So this is a fun pick.
Can I just ask one thing that you also mentioned, Jeff? Like I kind of now look at it when we talk about IVB for college pitchers, we talk about the riding fastball top of the zone, that difference between the baseball in college and the pro ball. Like, are we talking that we should subtract 10%, 15%? Like, if you see a 19 or a 20 IVB in college, I kind of feel like I'm expecting that to be a 16 or 17 in pro ball. Is that how you put it?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a range, right? I think, like, as we come up, you know, when we deliver the information over the course of, you know, the big numbers, like the entirety of a season, we give you averages. But in reality, it means that his vertical break on his fastball probably isn't lower than 15 and probably is up to like 19, 20 inches of induced vertical break consistently on like Hawkeye devices. So I think like his best fastballs are probably still around there, but there's enough sort of vertical break within the profile to sacrifice an inch or two from what we see in college. The translation, I would say, like on average is about maybe an inch to an inch and a half of induced vertical break. In terms of the difference, there are some guys where it stays pretty consistent. Chase Burns's devices at Wake Forest were really well calibrated, and that stayed pretty consistent to what we've even seen in the major leagues. So there are exceptions to the rule. And I think on the hitting side, it's kind of similar where you probably subtract 2 miles per hour, maybe 3 miles per hour off of like a 90th percentile exit velocity to see what it translates to in pro ball. Sometimes it's a little bit smaller than others. You know, Jack Caglianone hasn't had that big of a difference. Kurtz hasn't had that big of a difference in pro ball. So I still think, you know, you just try to look at it at scale. And at scale, Bremner rides it with velocity as well as anybody in the top of this class.
Okay, we'll go to number six, the Pirates, and Peter Picking.
I guess I'm going to go slightly off the board as well, though this is a realistic option there, and I'm going to take JoJo Parker.
No, no, Peter. I've had him in the first two staff drafts, and I was trying to make it all three.
I'm going to take JoJo. He's got one of the more polished and best hit tools of any prepster in this year's class. I'm a real believer in the hit-power combination. He's got a keen eye for the strike zone. He's a strong, athletic kid with a pretty swing with good bat speed and strength throughout. He gets his barrel to all four quadrants of the zone, adjusts really well. He runs well. He's got a good internal clock defensively with a strong arm, but I'm a real believer in the offensive profile, which is what's kind of carrying him throughout this draft cycle. I just think he's going to hit it every stop and make a real impact with the bat.
Yeah, I really like that pick. JoJo's become one of my favorite hitters in this class. Like you mentioned, just one of the more exciting hit power combinations, really good athlete. This makes it annoying for me picking seven for the Marlins, sizing up probably mostly college names right here. And I think I'm going to go with Jamie Arnold, left-handed pitcher for Florida State. I think he still has a chance to be a maybe number two sort of starter if everything goes well for him. The release traits that he has on the mound allow the fastball and the slider to play up. The movement on the changeup that he's thrown more this spring is kind of exceptional, to the point where he's even said it's almost makes it difficult to control. So I think with more reps, increasing the usability and the consistency of that pitch will give him three above average or better offerings. I think the fastball and slider are plus right now, and he's got a pretty good track record as a control and command guy in the ACC. So I'll play it relatively safe here with Jamie Arnold. And to you, JJ, with the Blue Jays.
Okay, so we have a piece coming out next week that I think the Blue Jays are a good example of this. Like, when I'm looking at this, I'm trying to evaluate a little bit what I would be thinking if I was running the Blue Jays, which obviously no one would be stupid enough to do that. But if I was looking at it, I would say that if I'm the Blue Jays, they're in it. They're, as we record this right now, they are the first place team in the AL East. So with them being in it now, and they are in it, I would assume for next year as well, having re-upped, you know, Vlad and having the rise of Addison Barger, and we could go through a lot of things that have gone well for them, Ernie Clement, all this, right? So I do think for them, like if you said, okay, if I'm looking at a high school shortstop, that guy's not going to help me next year. But look at these college pitchers, maybe they could. There's a bit of me that says maybe go Kyson Witherspoon here because I think it's a little bit more conventional. But we're going to roll the dice a bit, and we're going to say, Liam Doyle, you are a Toronto Blue Jay. Now, Doyle, the one thing, it's almost talking on both sides of my mouth, because I do think that Doyle could end up needing a little bit more developmental time, because you kind of want him to find probably another, you know, he probably needs to improve or add another pitch. The fastball is really good. The fastball is really good, you know, plays well, but it's a little bit fastball dependent. But at the same time, I do think that if you're the Blue Jays and you brought in Doyle, you can start thinking about it as, hey, he might make an impact for us at some point next year, which kind of reshapes your offseason a little bit too. If you're saying that we have a guy who could really make an impact for us next year, maybe then you go a little bit different as far as what you need to bring in for 2026. That's something that's a little different now than it used to be, but we're talking about Chase Burns is in the big leagues now. Paul Skeens a year before in the big leagues. These ACC, SEC pitchers, Rhett Lauder made the big leagues within a year of being drafted. These top of the draft ACC, SEC college starters, they're moving pretty quick.
I think the split change with Doyle is a little slept on too. I think that's kind of the secret weapon, so to speak, in his arsenal. Because, I mean, the fastball is a double plus pitch. That's been long known now. But the split change is way better, I think, than people give it credit for. I think it's a real effective secondary offering. I'd say it's above average.
The split and feedback we've gotten from, like, scouts who are actually watching the secondaries versus what some analysts are thinking about his secondaries is interesting. Because I do think most analysts tend to be a little bit more bullish on either what those secondaries for him are now or what they could be in the future with some more development. So, okay, reasonably chalky through the first eight picks. Jeff with maybe a little bit of a curveball, but we're going to Jeff again at number nine for the Reds.
Yeah, and you know, I'm happy that JJ took Liam Doyle for my Blue Jays, because it means that Liam Doyle gets to pitch at home in New Hampshire when he's eventually assigned to Double A next summer. I think it's a good pick, but here at number nine, I was going to go Doyle. I thought that that was a great landing spot for, you know, a college pitcher like him, you know, which means I'm thinking about Witherspoon a little bit, but I have to be honest, one of my favorite position players, maybe my favorite position player in this draft is Ava Arquette. Really stuck out for Peter and I in the Cape. I can remember seeing him first time in Falmouth, you know, as our editor likes to call him, he has a body like baseball Gumby, very tall, very thin, but he's very twitchy, very explosive, good right-handed hitter, really good in the field. And I can remember texting over to Peter and being like, this Arquette guy is going to be number one on our Cape list. Sure enough, that came to fruition, and he was. Took a big step forward with Oregon State, too. Better competition to an extent, more expectations. But at the same time, the bat-to-ball skill is about average, maybe is fringy in pro ball. It's pretty good swing decisions. He's a little bit passive, but I think some of the zone swing stuff is probably fixable just by making him a little bit more aggressive in the box. But when it comes to all of the college hitters are at the top of this draft, I really trust his contact quality in terms of hitting the ball hard and matching that with angles more so than any other hitter in the draft. So that's why I'm going with this one. I think he'd be a great fit for this Reds organization. You know, that could use you know,
I was about to say, I think for the Reds, this almost feels like a bit of a dream scenario. I don't think it's super likely that Arquette makes it here, but if he did, I think with the athletes that the Reds have taken, the size of players they've taken, the fact that they could use an infusion of offense, getting the best college hitter in this class feels like a win for them.
I mean, like, if you just look at it and said, okay, Arquette's going to be their third baseman, let's just say in 27, right? Let's not say 26, but in 27, and you have an infield with McClain at second, with Ellie at short, with Arquette at third, and maybe Sal Stewart, Cam Collier at first.
It really locks down some of their biggest issues, which I think is infield defense that kind of matches how Ellie plays. That having somebody who's a little bit more of like a traditional good defender with good actions that can, you know, cover his range when Ellie decides to play shade a little bit more towards second base, because he can cover so much range. And then also moves to McClain to second base, which I think
I wonder where that left side of the infield would rank in terms of just height and size of like historic MLB infields.
They'd be taller than some teams' front courts in the NBA.
All right, let's go to number 10, the White Sox, and Peter on the clock.
This is more a Team Flaherty pick, and I'm also going to probably, to the eye roll of some people, talk about his performance on the Cape a little bit, but I'm going to snag right-hander Kyson Witherspoon from Oklahoma. He had the best individual start that I saw last summer on the Cape, and he did a lot of what he did last summer this entire spring at Oklahoma. He's got a plus fastball slider combo, sits in the mid to upper 90s for the entirety of his outing. He holds his velo really well. He's got plus carry in the top half of the zone. He pairs it with kind of a shorter, more bullet slider that's a plus pitch. And he mixes in a bigger curveball with some depth and teeth. That's an effective third offering. And the changeup's a fine fourth pitch. So I think the White Sox pitching development also under Bannister has been really trending in the right direction. And it could be a good developmental match there as well. But, you know, the strikes have improved steadily from his time at JUCO, now at Oklahoma. He's trending in the right direction, I think, in a lot of facets. And I feel ultra confident in his ability to be a high level starter.
Nice.
My question is, do they get his twin brother Malachi on a package deal? Do they then like sign him around?
I wonder where Malachi will go. I think I think like third to fifth makes sense for him. I think I had a draft chat question on it yesterday, but for me, he fits in the third to sixth round bucket.
Yeah. I feel like I would not be surprised at all. I was about to say, I feel like he could easily go third, fourth round. I think there's going to be enough interest there with that arm talent.
The execution isn't there, but his stuff is like just as loud as Kyson's. Like I was shocked at like digging through the numbers, how much it jumps off the page at you.
Yeah. All right. At 11 for the A's, I'm on the clock here. I'm kind of torn between two hitters, one college, one high school. I'm going to go with the player that I just personally like a little bit more. And I think also might be the best pure hitter in the class. And also a player whose name I've jumbled up with Kyson Witherspoon quite a bit. But I'm going to go with Kasem Cunningham, who is a prep shortstop out of Texas. I think he's the one player that I have confidence in slapping a 60 on his hit tool. We've got maybe one other player in the class with a 60 on their hit tool. But on draft day, it sounds like he's got a chance to slide a little bit further than this. I really don't think he should. We've seen guys like Kevin McGonigal, Cole Young, who are just pure hitters. They don't have the most athleticism or secondary tools. You really need them to hit for them to provide value. But it's just one of the few players in this class where I have a lot of conviction in the hit tool. The A's have had some success with college players. They've moved quickly recently, but I just can't pass on his bat, and I would be a little concerned that I wouldn't get a shot at him. Although with this crew here, I maybe could have waited, but I'll happily tell you,
you could not have. I would have taken him next.
Perfect. I'm glad I took him then.
Well, if you've taken Kasem, so I can't take Kasem Cunningham. I'm going to go a little bit off the board here.
And this is 12 for the Rangers.
12 for the Rangers. I'm going with Gage Wood.
Oh,
okay.
I do think like we have him 18 here. And I'd say though that like of all the guys that kind of in this range, he has probably the biggest error bars to it because no one had more Cade Horton-esque momentum at the end of the year. He just got better and better. If you said that he ends up being kind of part of this top of the draft starting pitching crew, I don't think it's crazy because we saw kind of evidence of that at the end of the year, maybe a little less track record. You know, there are reasons why he's still on the board here at 12. Absolutely. And maybe he's going to be on the board longer, but I just really like him, you know, as a kind of a guy who the best, maybe the best is yet to come, but at the same time, showed kind of some of the best that he could in the college postseason as well.
Gage Wood is really difficult for me to evaluate from the outside because I feel like ultimately the decision on where Gage Wood is going to go in this draft is going to depend a lot on teams' medical evaluations and what the doctors are saying on his history. And that's just something we don't have available to us. And even if we did, I'm not a doctor, so I wouldn't know how to evaluate it. But in terms of pure stuff, one of the better fastballs in the class, a real breaking ball to go with it, great command control down the stretch. The talent definitely fits here. He's one of the more interesting wild cards who has ranges, I would say, from this spot, I mean, even a little higher if you want to look at where Cade Horton went, to early on after the first round is over. All right, and we're at 13 for Jeff and the Giants.
Yeah, and I think this pick could probably go a few different directions. I'm staring at Billy Carlson there and figuring he's probably off the board at this point, more than likely. But that said, I'm still going to pass on Carlson. I just think that Ike Irish is such a quintessential sort of Giants pick. Checks a bunch of different boxes. I think it's the right environment for him to develop as a catcher as well, while also maybe seeing some time in the outfield and potentially at first base. They need bats in this organization. I think just from a pure sort of combination of power plus hitting ability, kind of checks those boxes. The biggest question for me with Irish is really improving his angles so he can optimize that hard contact that he does make. I feel like, you know, over the last couple of months, I've heard a little bit more positive feedback in his ability to maybe stick at catcher. We've seen a lot of guys with this profile last at catcher a lot longer than we had anticipated. Austin Wells, obviously, being a prime example.
Can I use another example now? Because we use Austin Wells a lot. What about Hunter Goodman? Hunter Goodman was seen coming out of college as like,
you could do him, Cal Raleigh, Ryan Jeffers. Yeah. The one comp that I keep coming back to that I really like with Ike Irish is Tyler Soderstrom. Because I think they're similar, like bodies and swings and positional questions. If you're picking him here, Jeff,
and
would you be more inclined to stick him at catcher and develop him there, let him move quicker as a hitter?
Yeah,
and I think for me, it's ultimately like, does he actually want to catch? Because I think if he does, teams can do so much to help you improve there.
Yeah, and I think that the value of him remaining a catcher-eligible player, all right, so somebody who's maybe see some time other places, but you can improve the framing and the blocking and some of that stuff, and he has probably the best defensive catcher in the world right now to sort of learn from. And another guy that's kind of in charge of the decisions with the Giants that knows a thing or two about catching. Yep. I just feel like it's a really good fit from that standpoint. And in a lot of ways, you know, he checks very similar boxes. And I know it was a different organization, front office, that picked him, but he checks a lot of boxes that James Tibbs checked as well, who's kind of been shipped off. So he comes in probably a better hitter than Tibbs, probably a better athlete than Tibbs. And has more defensive value if you think he can potentially catch, even if it's 30% of your games when you give Patrick Bailey a rest in a few years. And Bailey's under contract till 2029. So I think you have time to sort of develop him right behind the plate and get, you know, whether it's the swing or just the receiving and the framing, that sort of stuff cleaned up a little bit. I think it's an interesting pick and, you know, obviously a big performer in the SEC. And I think that matters to a guy like Posey as well.
I love that. Love the fit. Love the value. Nice pick, Jeff. And we'll go to 14, the Rays and Peter.
So my pocket was picked on back-to-back picks with JJ going with Gage Wood and then Jeff going Ike Irish. So I'm going to go and take Merrick Houston, shortstop out of Wake Forest.
Well, my pocket was just picked, if that makes you feel better.
It's interesting how far Billy Carlson's sliding. But anyways.
Yeah, I want to get into that in a second after you go.
You know, the defensive ability with Merrick has long been the name of the game. He's a plus defender on the left side of the infield at shortstop. He's got a plus arm to boot, really smooth actions, great internal clock. It's a lot of what it looks like. He's a slam dunk to stick at the position. And then offensively, plus contact ability with a sound approach, advanced swing decisions. He completely transformed his body since last spring. He put on 20 plus pounds of really good weight, looks noticeably stronger, bigger, more physical. And like a good, stronger and physical, not kind of like this bad weight that, you know, leads to heaviness in the feet and lack of smoothness, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, the EV data is still kind of fringy, but for me, he's gone from a 30 power guy to 40, which I know does not necessarily blow anyone's socks off. Or
I think people maybe sleep on just how valuable 40 power from a shortstop who could maybe have a chance at winning a gold glove and bringing contact skills. Like, that's a really valuable player. I mean, maybe gold glove is a little crazy, but I do think he's a top two, top three defender in this class. And I would even say, like, some days when I watch them, I think he's just as good or maybe even a little tick better than Carlson because he does have a little bit more range. So I think it fits here.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's a very appealing profile, and I do think he is a gold glove caliber defender when all is said and done. The range is really impressive, like you said. It's, you know, the actions are very, very polished, and offensively it's a kind of an appealing profile as well, especially for a shortstop.
Cool. Well, that is who I would have taken 15, but JJ, I'll just go ahead and make him the pick because you want to talk about him. But I do think I'm going to take Billy Carlson here. I'll stop his slide. Part of the reason I'm comfortable stopping his slide is because Boston has done such a good job with their hitting development. And that is the one area where I have a few question marks about Billy Carlson. The swing is not sort of your ideal, how you would draw it up swing. He isn't like super physical yet. There are people who think he's going to get a lot stronger. He does have wide shoulders, a lot of space to fill out. But you're taking him here because he's an impact defender. We've got 70 on the defense. He's got a 70 arm. He gets Mason Wynn comps, both for just the tools as a defender and hitter now, his two-way ability. He can throw a fastball in the mid-90s. He can throw like a high-spin breaking ball, a higher-spin breaking ball than what Seth Hernandez, his teammate, who is a pitcher first, is throwing right now. I'm not really super into him as a pitcher, but it's a nice fallback. I do think he can be an impact defender, and I would be very curious like how Boston would – I don't know if they need to necessarily tinker with the swing, but what they could get him to look like in a few years, because there are contact skills to build on here and to make you feel comfortable. Some teams who are really model heavy love Billy Carlson because of the contact ability and his track record of making a lot of contact as a hitter. So feels like he's not going to get this far on draft day. I think teams in this range would be thrilled if he did, but I'll just scoop him off the board. And what do you think, JJ?
So the thing that just jumped out to me is if you'd have asked me before we started this, which of the top 10 picks would be on the board last, I was pretty much, I'd say 90% confident it was going to be Billy Carlson.
And for probably us specifically or the actual draft?
Us.
Okay.
And I would say this because this is, I would say like we want to explain something here. It's useful, which is the rankings that we have here are as best we can do. This is not Carlos Collazo says, or Carlos Collazo and Peter Flaherty say, or all of us even say, we've gotten in a room and beaten each other up, and here we strong-armed it, and this is why it's in this order. It really is that we're trying to talk to people. You know, we have how many words of scout notes do we have now, Los?
It's close to 100,000 for this year's
class. We have 100,000 words or so of scout notes for this year's draft. And so we put guys where we're hearing the feedback to put them. But I would say I kind of felt like that if you said, I know from just listening to you all talk about it, I felt like if you said, hey, do you personally prefer JoJo Parker or Kasen Cunningham to Billy Carlson? I think that all four of us probably do.
Mm. No, I prefer Carlson. I don't like Cunningham.
Okay.
I wouldn't draft Cunningham.
Yeah. I like Carlson. I like Carlson more than I like Eli Willits. I actually don't think it depended who I had for a pick. Like if I had the Blue Jays or the Rangers, I would have taken Carlson there. I don't think he gets beyond the 8 to 12 range in the real draft. And I actually think there's probably a chance he goes earlier than that to like the Pirates or a team like that.
I think his
Seth Hernandez goes
6, 7, 8 screams a couple of high school shortstops to me.
Yeah.
So
I agree with you there.
Cool. All right. So we'll go to me in the Twins.
Oh boy. Okay. So could go a couple of different ways here.
This word opens up a little bit. There's no,
it really does open up. It really does open up. There's a little bit of a temptation to say, okay, Jace LaViolette, are you getting a bargain here at this point? But at the end of the day,
I'll just say too, really quickly, we've had 15 picks and our top 14 players are all off the board. So it's been extremely chalky based on the BA board. And we'll see if, I don't think that's going to remain the case much longer.
You know, again, and we're doing this, you know, as we would do it in these scenarios, not what we think the team's going to do. But if I look at this and I look at it and I try to think a little bit, though, like what would fit for what I like, but also would fit for the Twins, I'm going to go Steele Hall here. I'm going to stay very chalky because I do think that he's a good value here at 16. And as much as, you know, the Twins kind of have had a tale of three seasons already where they were awful and then they were great and then their pitching fell apart and they're awful again. I do think that like getting a guy with the kind of the a high school shortstop like Steele Hall, who I do feel like in a lot of years would probably rank higher than this because it's just such a good year for high school shortstops. I feel like it's a good value at 16.
Yeah, well, apologies to Steele. This almost dooms him to some sort of injury since the entirety of the Twin system to be dealing with chronic injuries. But hopefully he can stay healthy. And we'll go to 17 in the Cubs for Jeff.
Yeah, I was a little nervous that JJ was going to put on his Twins model cap and take the player that I was going to take here for the Cubs. They are a model team. I cover the Cubs. And I have tried to draft a little bit in line with what I think teams will do, but reasonably so. And I think Aloy is just such a Cubs pick. Golden Spikes winner, big performer at a big school in college, plays shortstop. They've drafted so many shortstops that are likely to move off the position over the last couple of years. And really all their picks seem to like be listed at one position and likely to move off of that. And I think the other part of it too is he's a cape performer, and we know that the Cubs love their themselves some cape performers. So I think Aloy for me is the pick here at the Cubs. And this is one that I would put down a couple of bucks to anybody listening that I think the Cubs make this pick. I think this might be the Cubs pick.
Well, I hope so, Jeff, because this is also the guy that we had mocked to the Cubs in our most recent mock. So hopefully, hopefully you're right.
just for the non-Cubs fans out there going, what do they mean by that feels like a Cubs pick? I think we could loop this into the Matt Shaw plus Cam Smith. Ian Happ plus Nico Horner. Plus we could just go down that list of guys who like the productive, like you said, college middle infielder who you like the bat and you like the glove.
Exactly.
Yeah, I tend to associate the Cubs now with like players that have a long track record of performance. Like some teams weigh length of track record more than others. I would put them in that camp solidly. So if there was like some big, huge pop-up hitter, trying to think, Xavier Isaac maybe is a player that doesn't feel very Cubs-ish as maybe a contrast to that. But let's go to 18, the D-backs, and Peter.
So Jeff picked my pocket again because I was going to take Vejeva. So I kind of have to call an audible, and I'll take – this is more, again, a Team Flaherty kind of pick. And I'll take Brendan Summerhill, kind of the steady Eddie college performer. He's not going to blow you away from a tool standpoint, but he's got a plethora of average or above-average tools across the board. An above average hitter with advanced contact skills. I think he posted a 90% in zone contact rate. You know, he could grow into potentially average power. He's got a good body at 6'3", 195 pounds with some physicality remaining and projection remaining. He runs well. He's got an average arm in the outfield. I'm curious to see where he ends up sticking defensively. I think there's a non-zero chance he can end up sticking in center field. I think the actions and speed play well out there, but worst case, he'd move off it and go to a corner, probably right field. But
this feels like a very D-backs pick as well, because they tend to like these hitterish types. I mean, they've drafted a lot of high school pure hitters. And I do think like on the board right now, if you ask me to point to like the best pure hit tools available, it would probably be Summerhill and then maybe Kaden Bodine, who I was also wondering if that was going to be your guy, because I know how much you love Kaden Bodine.
So I don't want to tip my hand too much, but I do pick again somewhat soon. I like Summerhill's hit ability. There's very little swing and miss against any pitch type. I think sliders are kind of a bugaboo, but I think we're growing more power and the secondary tools are solid as well.
So as I'm looking at the board here, we're getting into a lot of like power oriented bats who have real hit questions, who seem like the best available to me. I could go down a little bit further on the board and take some high school profiles that are a little more well-rounded. I don't know if it's, you guys want me to say who I'm deciding between here, if that'll mess up your picks. I'm thinking through Xavier Nyans, Luke Stevenson, and Ethan Conrad are the guys that I'm kind of sizing up now. And I think I'm going to go with, Ethan Conrad. I think I have a lot more faith in his ability to hit at a high level compared to guys like Nyans and Luke Stevenson. Really, the only question mark with him is just health and the injury. His track record of performance is pretty exceptional. Dating back years, he's got wood bat track record. I don't think the Chase DeLauder comps are all too unreasonable given the contact skills, power, physicality that he has. He's like 6'4", big for the position in center field. I think he's probably more likely to play a corner outfield spot in the future, but he runs pretty well. He has a good arm. So in terms of the combination of like performance, tools, upside, he checks a lot of boxes, and it's really just the health of the shoulder. So I kind of talked myself into this one, but I like the hit power combo here.
It's first round tools with Conrad. I mean, he's always hit. He's got a big league body. I think he's got a chance for three above average or better tools with hit, power, and run, you know, when all's said and done on him. Great athlete. I mean, I think he'll get a chance to prove he can stick in center field, but I'm with you. When I got a handful of in-person looks at him, it looks way better in right, or it looks like it will profile better in right than it will center long-term. But I like that pick. That was a quasi-pocket pick too.
It's a huge what if for Conrad, because early in the season when he was performing, he was getting talked about in like back of the top 10. So if he was given a fully healthy year, I don't think it's crazy to say we'd be talking about him in the same way as we were talking about Jace LaViolette preseason. So we'll go to JJ and the Brewers at 20.
Okay. I feel like I have a decent sense of what the Brewers are going to do. We're not going to do 20 rounds here, but the Brewers basically, they take a hitter or two at the top, if they really like a pitcher, they'll take him with their second or third pick. And then they pretty much take pitchers from then on out. And they really trust that with their pitching development. Like if you just look at it year after year, that's what they do. So I'm looking at a hitter here because I don't think, for one, I think that's where the strength of the board is. But for two, I think that kind of does fit the Brewers and also kind of where they are right now. And I'm going to go Alex Lodis, the shortstop from FSU, who had one of the better years, had a great start, kind of tailed off slightly, I guess you could say, at the end of the year. But like I would say that this is the team that I would say you could also describe it as loves their shortstops playing everywhere around the infield. Their second baseman is a guy who can play shortstop. Their shortstop's a guy who can play shortstop. And usually the third baseman, your shortstop. Yeah, but it'd be really weird if they did, because they also use often a lot of guys who can play shortstop who play third. But
Lodis, it's funny, they do the same with their outfield. They have a lot of center fielders playing corners.
Right. So I actually, speaking of that, I did kind of look at Cam Camarella there a little bit too. I think he also kind of fits in this range for the Brewers. But, and again, just like a very productive, large conference college, ACC college hitter who has defensive value, seemed like a good fit here.
Cool. Yeah, I like that. I think people maybe sleep on Lodis's ability to stick at shortstop more than they should. I think he's a good athlete and he's got a great arm. So he's made a few really impressive plays. And we'll go to Jeff, 21, picking for the Astros.
Yeah, and Astros obviously landed a catcher early last year. I don't think they go back to the well on that one this year. Pitching and drafting pitchers outside of the first round, regardless of, sort of who's in the seat as the GM or as the scouting director, is, continue to kind of roll along. So I do think they go with a position prospect here, and I think they stay in the state of Texas and they stop the slide on Jace Laviolette. Just checks a lot of boxes for the types of players that the Astros typically go after. I think Jacob Melton, Bryce Matthews, though different in their ways, are not all that dissimilar. Both players where I think the biggest question mark, particularly with Matthews, is the swing and miss in the profile. There's on-base ability with Laviolette. There's certainly swing and miss in the profile. That's the biggest question mark. He can be overly passive at times. The Astros have taken on a lot of players like this. He has the athleticism. We know that it's maybe ticked down a little bit this year. Maybe that comes back. There's certainly power in the profile. The angles are good. He can pull the ball. So I think he checks a lot of boxes for them. And in a lot of ways, they're maybe getting a discount here at this spot. So based on their system, he comes in and is probably their number one prospect as well. Was thinking maybe a couple of other different college hitters with more well-rounded data here. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately I go with Laviolette because of what the upside is, up the middle player, and sort of fits a lot of those boxes that we've seen the Astros check before.
This would fit based on where some of these, like, not one-dimensional, but outfield, college outfield profiles with real hit tool questions. Like, this is the range Fantoni Cut went in a year ago. I mean, JJ, you did the piece on just like contextualizing Jace Laviolette's pure hitting ability and where that fits in the first round. Is this even still a range where you're afraid of the contact skills, or do you think the upside in the tool set is worth it at 20 compared to 10?
I think at this is you're getting to the point where it's like, even though the track record is really bad, you're hoping that he's an anomaly, right? Mm. Like, I mean, again, but it is true. Like I know that the funny thing about what we do is if you're someone who follows the major leagues primarily and you go, why are they talking about batting average? And because on base is more important at the big league level. And that's true. But batting average does have a lot of value when you talk about development and the amateur level, because there's a lot more variance to all this. And hitting under 260, again, we did the study. You can check it out at baseballamerica.com. Hitting under 260 as a college first round pick, it almost never happens. And the few times it has, it's really hard to find a whole lot of success for it. If you hit under 300 in your draft year as a college pick, first round pick, the success rate's very low. And not shockingly, because again, the success rate if you hit over 400 is much higher. Not a shock. not a probably an overwhelming development to explain that.
Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? It's true. Your biological age, the age of your cells and organs, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, dementia, and more. That's why learning your biological age can be truly life-changing, and that's exactly what the True Age test from True Diagnostic helps you do. With just a simple at-home test, you can uncover your true biological age and get personalized insights into your true biological age and take control of your health like never before. No doctor's visits, no labs, just a quick finger prick from the comfort of your home. I recently ordered the test myself because I really wanted to get a clearer picture of my long-term health. It was eye-opening to learn that if your biological age is just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk for major diseases can go up by 30 to 50%. That's a huge wake-up call for me. But here's the good news, and this is the part that really inspired me. Up to 90% of biological aging is driven by lifestyle. That means the way we eat, move, sleep, and manage stress plays a massive role in how fast or slow our bodies age. True Diagnostic doesn't just tell you your biological age. It gives you a personalized report full of clear, science-backed steps you can take to actually slow down aging and improve your health over time. I'm really excited to see what our results will say and what I can do differently to better support my body as I age. It may be I'm adjusting my sleep. It may be changing supplements. It may be making smarter food choices or exercising more. It feels empowering to know that aging isn't just something that happens. It's something that we have control of. The test itself is super easy. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You send in your sample using a prepaid mailer, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you get a detailed online report with actionable insights that you can use. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code BASEBALL to get 20% off your entire order of subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use BASEBALL at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Cool. All right. We will go to pick number 22, the Braves and Peter.
This is another hashtag Team Flaherty pick, but I'm going to take Gavin Keelan, second baseman out of Tennessee. I think you obviously have to be encouraged by the uptick in power output this year. I think it's more like a 45 long-term, but again, similar to Merrick Houston and Lowe, to your point, I think you can kind of, it's easy to underrate like the value of a guy that's, 45 power, 55 hit long-term. Mm-hmm. Like I feel pretty comfortable in sticking 55 hit on Keelan. I wouldn't go as far as to say he's a plus hitter, but I think it's no doubt 55. The adjustments he made, looks like he's got into his more into his back hip, backside, and coiling more. That paid off. And he's not the free swinger he was during his first two seasons at Louisville. He's more selective in a positive way. And I think he's hunting pitches he knows he can do damage against. The barrel skills are there. He backspins the baseball. Defensively, he's a second base only. He's not a great athlete. And the injuries kind of give me a little bit reason to pause. But I think he fits well in this range. And then also the data with him stands out. His 90th exit velocity, 90th percentile EV is 105.1. Consistently on the barrel, does damage against pitches in the heart of the zone, jumps on them, has multiple batted balls over 110. So
this would be a fun pick for the Braves because they could desperately use some offense added to their system. It would be a change of pace from what they've done in recent years. I think they're on the longest streak of like pitchers with their first overall pick. And they might be sitting in a range on draft day where batters are their most likely outcome, especially if Cage Wood goes in front of them like we have in this staff draft. So 23 for the Royals. This feels like a run of high school players in the actual draft. The top players on the board for us are high school players with upside. So I'm looking at a lot of these profiles and players here. I might go with Daniel Pierce, who I think could realistically be their pick as well on draft day. I was basically deciding between each of our top three players on the board, Xavier Nyans, Cruz Schoolcraft, Daniel Pierce. I'm just a sucker for high school shortstop profiles. I think Pierce is a dynamic athlete. He is not all that different a defender to Billy Carlson and Merrick Houston, the two most famous defenders in this class. He's got a cannon of an arm. His actions are silky smooth. He made a real strides offensively as a hitter. I do think I'm taking on a little bit of hit risk here with Daniel Pierce. For most of his track record in high school, it was a glove first profile, and the hitting has come on recently. So I feel confident that I'm getting a premium defender. And I think there is some more projection for Daniel physically, but I do think I maybe could have played it safer with some college profiles that I feel a little bit better about the bat, but the overall athletic package and up the middle profile is too exciting for me, I think, to pass up.
Okay. That I'm glad you went that way. Nothing against Pierce, but I'm looking. I do
shade the Tigers on my pick, JJ.
No, but I'm doing the Tigers list, and I do the Tigers, for us, and I kind of feel like that their
profile at the top of their draft class is hit tool first, right? Up mm-hmm. the middle players who can hit, which is the exact opposite of what the Tigers approach used to be, which was up the middle players who can field with some tools and then hope they can teach them to hit. This approach is working a lot better for them, I would say. And so what I would say with that is that I'm going to take Caden Bodine, who's the best, I believe, pure hitter left on the board.
Peter just felt that in his soul.
Yeah. And I do think that Bodine, like, for one, you're talking about a guy who can hit and can catch. It's a little bit unusual profile because the question would be more power, and power, usually catcher is a little bit more of a profile power position. But I think that that can develop. And at the same time, Caden Bodine, like, is, again, a really good hitter who's going to stay up the middle, who's going to provide defensive value as well. I love that pick at 24 for them.
This is the only other player in the class that we have a 60 hit tool on right now. I mean, his contact skills historically are excellent. So we'll go to 25, the Padres, and Jeff.
Yeah, and I have to stay with a prep hitter here for AJ Preller and his typical guy that's had a lot of buzz, and I've heard may even go, you know, higher in the first round than this, is third baseman out of California, Gavin Fien. Pretty big power, you know, physical right-handed hitter, shortstop now, probably moves to third base. I just think when you think about the helium within the prep class and a choice between him or Nyans, I think, you know, the Padres probably lean toward Fien, just looking at the tea leaves and that sort of thing. I don't have nearly as much history with him as like Carlos would, and having seen him and all those sort of things. But he's got some helium, some buzz right now, and feels like, you know, a Padres-like, an AJ Preller-like pick.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. And I do feel like once you get beyond Ethan Holliday, Jojo Parker, if you're looking at most exciting hit power combinations in the class, Gavin Fien would be on the short list for the next player you're talking about. He was one of the best performers last summer. The offensive setup is a little unusual. It's unorthodox, but he just makes it work. He has a great ability to backspin the ball, to make contact to all fields. It's funny thinking about his helium late, because he did have an up and down spring. And I've been talking to people who wonder, okay, have the models been fully switched on? A lot of model heavy teams really like Fien because of his summer track record. So maybe he's a player who just appeals to everyone. We're talking about the Padres, who are definitely not a model heavy team. They're very much a scout centric, like tools, athletes, upside sort of team. But the fact that he makes sense for them just means it's a pretty appealing profile for the entirety of the industry. So I do think he has a chance to go in front of this spot on draft day. And we're at 26, Phillies and Peter.
I'm going to take prep outfielder Slater DeBrun. I caught him really good down in Jupiter. I liked my look at him. Compact frame, you know, he's just 5'9", maybe 185, 190 pounds, but there's a lot of strength and physicality packed into it, especially in his upper body. It's a compact and explosive operation in the box. He's got plus bat speed. He's kind of a prototypical high energy leadoff hitter archetype. The bat to ball skills and approach are both really advanced and high level. From what I saw, there's a clear feel for the barrel. I saw it in Jupiter. And then in the 2024 circuit, I think he posted just at above or just a tick below a 90% overall in zone contact rate. And he does particular damage against fastballs. And it's a hit over power profile, no doubt, but there's some sneaky impact to the pull side. And I'm really, really confident in his ability to stick in center field. Mm-hmm. The off the bat reads and are excellent. Takes really efficient routes and paths to the baseball. It's a quick first step. The instincts are outstanding. And there's range in all directions, above average arm, plus defender. And he's a borderline plus runner. It mm-hmm. shows on the base paths, and it shows defensively in center field. And I think with him, the advanced baseball sense, it shines across all facets of the game and on both sides of the baseball. I think the intangibles with him are a cherry on top. So I'll take him here at 26.
What's interesting with this class that we maybe haven't talked about a ton, but is becoming clear here, is depending on how you're classifying Ike Irish, this is just the fourth outfielder that we've had drafted. The high school outfielder class is not super strong, and I think a lot of the college outfielders also took a step back this year. So I'm wondering if the industry views this class as like a generally down outfield group, or just the capital of shortstops who are going to go in front kind of artificially slide those profiles down. But it is interesting. It feels like a lot lower number of outfitters we've had come off the board than is typical. But I have 27 for the Guardians. There are a number of profiles here that are interesting. Initially, I was thinking about Andrew Fisher as like a hitter they would really like. But I'm actually most excited about Cruz Schoolcraft. And I do think that I would be even more excited about Cruz Schoolcraft if he was going to a team like the Guardians that has done a really good job with pitching development. I think the Guardian system right now is fairly flush with offensive profiles, and just thinking through the amount of first base sort of profiles they have honestly pushed me a little off of Andrew Fisher. I do think Cruz Schoolcraft's upside is a little bit higher, so I don't think this is purely a like play for what their organization needs necessarily, but kind of outlier trade, 6'8" left-hander, fastball already up into the upper 90s. He's shown flashes of a slider and a changeup. I think the changeup is actually a little bit more advanced now compared to the slider. I have some faith that the Guardians would be able to help refine the secondaries, unlock a little bit more consistency. And I'll go with the second high school pitcher off the board here at 27 for the Guardians.
Which does feel like that we're now kind of edging into that range of where we, you know, like I know we have Schoolcraft ranked higher than that, but it's not shocking if this kind of is the area that you start to see the other high school pitchers come off the board.
I don't think it would be surprising at all if there was only one high school pitcher taken in the first round on draft day.
Right. And we came within basically one pick of the true first round wrapping up here.
Yep.
Okay. So I've got a Royals pick here. This is their second pick. They've already taken Daniel Pierce in this. Trying to fit, you know, with this also, like, okay, so they've taken a high school, they've taken a high school shortstop off the board. It's not going to fix what they have, kind of their problem they have right now, but obviously the Royals need outfield help, and Cam Cannarella does feel like very much a Royals type of center fielder, rangy, speedy, hit first kind of guy. They have a massive outfield. They're one of the biggest outfields in baseball. So I just feel like that there is a perfect blend there. Like it wasn't, I would say like with Cam, like the question we've always had is like the power is just never taken a step forward, but he has been kind of always a productive hitter, 3-year track record of success at a top program, playing through injury as well. All these things that kind of to get him at 28 feels pretty good.
Yeah. And Cam is interesting because again, we don't have a lot of pure hitters we feel confident in this class. Cam is one of the better hitters. Like you mentioned, the track record is really impressive. I think he came out of the gates a little bit slow. He didn't play a lot in the fall with recovering from an arm surgery that he had on that right shoulder. And I think a lot of that was maybe getting his timing back, and down the stretch really performed well in front of a bunch of big crowds at the ACC tournament. He was dynamite. He can slap the ball all over the field. He's an impact runner, impact defender. But I do think that Cam, you could maybe argue that he has 230s on his card between his power and his arm. And for most of the industry, the arm is just a massive question mark. As he gets further away from that injury, I wonder what it's going to look like. But he's a dynamic defender regardless, even if he had no arm. And we'll go to, Jeff at 29 for the D-backs?
Yeah. And, you know, last year they had a PPI pick, and then they followed that up with a comp pick this year. Taking college player in the first with the first pick, I was kind of between two different groups. I thought Schoolcraft was a great fit because they've shown that they do like to maybe target with one of those picks a high school player, maybe two, like they did last year. They also really like tall pitchers. They drafted Caden Grice a couple years ago, John West. And then is it Garnett from William and Mary was another guy that was like 6'6", 6'8". So they like the tall guys. You scoop me there. I think that they end up going here with Josh Hammond. I think that's a lot in line with the Slade Caldwell pick, as well as the JD Dix pick, both high school players with a lot of upside, some tools. Really interesting player, kind of entered the season in the draft cycle, considered more of a pitching prospect than a position player. He's an athlete. There's some power, explosiveness, that sort of thing, a lot to bank on. And they've shown with some of these guys, like with Dix, they will take it a little bit slow. So maybe he's a guy that doesn't debut this year and we don't see until the complex next year. They can coach up some of those abilities and really get the most out of them. And targeting high school players with upside, they've done fairly well for themselves. So I think that's probably my pick here at the D-backs, though I considered a few different players.
Nice.
And it sounded I feel like these next two picks are going to be the ones that Orioles fans, you know, like they feel like that they're about as engaged in this, and they're going to very much, they're hanging on every word to see what you all are going to pick, which can be summarized. So Peter, are you taking a pitcher?
Well, I will say it's the second time already in the draft that it was a double pocket pick with JJ taking Cam Cannarella and then Jeff taking Josh Hammond, who I was also going to go with.
I will say it's interesting here with the Orioles lined up for two, because there are two players on the board here that I've heard them heavily tied to with even their first pick. So
curious where you're going to go. I'll probably punt it to Lowe's at 31 with like who the more realistic option is. This is, again, like a Peter Flaherty-centric kind of pick, but I'm going to take Indiana outfielder Devin Taylor here at pick 30. You know, all he's done is hit throughout his college career, whether it was on the Cape, the NECBL, at Indiana, wherever it is. I mean, he's hit. It's one of the better hit power combos collegiately. I've got 55s on both. It's a really simple setup in the box and repeatable operation and without a lot of moving parts. He's a below average athlete with a kind of a bad body, and he's relegated to left field defensively, but you're buying the bat. And I have faith in the hit power combination translating professionally. There's a lengthy wood bat track record here, both from a hit ability standpoint and from a power standpoint. The bat to ball skills are above average. It's a really high level approach. And I think this spring he posted an overall chase rate of just 19%. He generates quality contact consistently. I'm a real believer in Taylor's offensive prowess.
Well, at 31, picking again for the Orioles, I'm going to take a player that I've considered for each of my last three picks, really. And I do think that the Orioles have been tied to Xavier Nyans in the actual draft. I'm curious if you guys have like an obvious reason for why you've passed, because he is the best available player on the board right now. It's interesting to think through Nyans, because if you talk to scouts who really like him, they'll say, well, what is like the real difference between him and Ethan Holliday, who's absolutely not getting to this spot on draft day? And then you talk to the scouts who are maybe a little lower on him, and there's a lot more hit risk. They think he's definitely going to move to a corner. I think he's going to move to a corner, but I still really like him. I think there is a nice blend of on-base ability, a keen batting eye, and a ton of power, maybe as much power potential as anyone in the high school class. It's like him and Ethan Holliday, Quentin Young for me. So I do think the Orioles like these sorts of hitters, but I'm curious if you guys were just allergic to maybe some of the hit risk that we think he might have.
The lack of a hit tool for me was the kicker. You know me, Los, and everyone on this call knows me. That was kind of the reason for me straying away from him, but I'm with you. I mean, he's got a chance for 70 power, if it's not already 70 raw. He's got a plus arm, big, strong kid. So there are a lot of there are some appealing characteristics there, but the lack of hitability gave me reason to pause.
Cool.
That's the thing. Same thing I was going to say is that I'm just generally going to be averse to taking a high school hitter who's kind of viewed as a below average, potentially below average hit tool. That's something there. I'm really kind of struggling to come up with. We don't have a whole lot of those guys, you know, in first round consideration over the last few years. Like if you go to top 50 picks, I think you could throw Blake Mitchell. We kind of projected that way, but he's a catcher. Henry Bolte a few years ago kind of fit that way. He's a top 50 type
James
talent.
James Wood kind of fits that. He did a 30% strikeout rate.
I would have been way higher on his hit tool than a 40 for James Wood, but what about Benny Montgomery?
I would have too, but.
Oh yeah, Benny for sure.
Benny Montgomery maybe is a good one.
Montgomery's kind of making the point though, isn't it? I mean, I hate to say it, but.
No one was saying Joe Adele 40 hit tool at the time. So
Elijah Green.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Bury my pick, all of you. All right, JJ, you're up 32 for the Brewers.
Okay. So we're sitting here at 32 for the Brewers. I'm going to go Anthony Anderson. And I'm going to do that partly because Peter keeps reacting every time I pick. I like that.
You're stealing all my guys. It'd be like Billy Madison and Steve Buscemi, like with the like lipstick, like crossing off all my guys as they go two picks before me. It's unreal.
So Anthony Ianson, why do you like him, JJ?
I just think that he's got a lot of chance to be a starter. And, you know, he's not as high. You know, the reason he's going to be available here is he's probably not as high an impact, high a ceiling as some of the guys who went, you know, college pitchers who went in the first round, top of the first round. But at the same time, like, I just feel really comfortable about the likelihood. Like, and by the way, if I'm taking him for the Brewers, probably, you know, whatever you think of him right now, add a tick to that. Because they're going to figure out some things with him. They do that. They're really good at pitching development. So I'm giving them a really good pitcher to develop.
Awesome. All right. We will go 33 Red Sox and Jeff.
Yeah. I think in reality, this pick has a very good likelihood, and maybe at 15, of actually being Gavin Kylan. Red Sox drafted him already out of high school. They followed him closely. He checks all their boxes. I think he's a guy that, you know, with the extra pick that they more or less traded Quinn Priester to acquire, I don't think they really care about Yoffrey Rodriguez, if I'm being honest. I think it was getting that additional bonus pool money to be able to pull a second player down to this pick. He's obviously not here in this draft.
I don't think he will be in the real draft either. That would be shocking to me.
I honestly think he might be their pick at 15. I wouldn't be shocked.
Yep. I think we have him there now.
I think a really interesting thought exercise is just, you know, who are the young players with good hit tools and maybe projectable builds that would be a really good fit here for the Red Sox. And, you know, two of his teammates have already gone, but I think Brady Ebel of Corona High School makes a lot of sense for the Red Sox here. 6'3", 190 pounds. Throughout all the scouting reports and the work that you guys have done, you've talked a lot about the polish. He's a line drive hitter. There's a great foundational hit tool here, but there is some projection for more power. That sounds like exactly the kind of guy the Red Sox want to pull in at this pick.
California shortstop.
Yeah, and a California shortstop or middle infielder. They got some history there with Mikey Romero. They got some history there with Nick York as well. I picked the wrong York for a second, but Nick York as well. You know, and they'd scout that area really well. So I think it wouldn't be a surprising pick here and kind of a fun fit for the Red Sox.
Yeah, this is one of the teams that I feel like I've had associated with the Red Sox in the actual draft. So I like that one, Jeff. All right, Peter, you 34 for the Tigers.
I'm going to roll with AJ Russell. I think he's one of the bigger wild card guys, especially bigger wild card arms in this year's draft. And honestly, I mean, him going in this range or higher, or, you know, even a little in a prominent spot is going to be due in large part to his fastball. It's one of the best of its kind in this year's class. It's a 70 grade pitch. Los, you and I talked about it a little bit on yesterday morning's or the most recent draft podcast. We talked about it a little bit, but it's a 70 grade pitch. It sits in the mid 90s. It's been up to 98 with an outlier release height. I mean, he's got an outlier release height of just 5'1" and a really flat vertical approach angle of, I think it's -4.15. And, you know, it gets closer to the upper threes, you know, when he elevates it more and gets it in the top third of the zone, and it creates this rise ball, ski ball effect. He's got a big league body at 6'6" and 223 pounds. He put on like 15 pounds, I think, of good weight since last year. The slider has flashed. The changeup looks like it could be an okay third offering. Mm-hmm. The health is a little bit of a risk. And is also the reason why he's such a wild card. He didn't pitch a whole lot this year. He came back and showed flashes, was excellent as a freshman, but man, I love the clay you can mold with the fastball, the release traits, the body. I think he's going to start at strikes. He's a very fun arm.
Cool. So for the Tigers, we've got multiple college players. JJ took Caden Bodine at 24 for them. And then Peter going here with AJ Russell. Two of the guys that I've been considering for a while are still on the board. They're the best available on the board here. Luke Stevenson and Andrew Fisher, if you guys are watching along on the YouTube. But at three for the Mariners, I took Seth Hernandez just because I was infatuated with the talent. I do think the Mariners could use a little offense. So I'm going to go with the most well-rounded hitter on the board, a guy who I think could easily sneak his way into the teens. And that's Andrew Fisher at Tennessee. I think he just has a great combination of patience, contact skills, power. He's already pretty optimized in terms of his batted ball angles. He gets the ball in the air to the pull side a ton. He's very clearly a high energy player. I'm sure some people like that. Some people maybe critique it. I have no problems with it at all. But his track record as a performer in power conferences for years now is impressive to me. He was one of the best hitters in the SEC. Batted ball data is good. not too concerned about the defensive profile. I don't think you're going to be getting a ton defensively, but I do think this overall offensive package could go 20 spots higher, and it would make sense to me. So for the Mariners, I'm happy with it here at 35.
Well, I kind of didn't know where you were going to go there, but with you going that way, I am going to end Luke Stevenson's slide. Best value on the board, you know, as far as our board, you know, 12 spots after we have him at 24. Much of what we said about Jace LaViolette is true here. Like, this is a guy who hit 251 this year. That is simply an unacceptable number for a college hitter. You know, that's just not 250 in college baseball is a very low batting average. But that's really like, okay, if you take that aside and say, okay, there are hit tool concerns here. He is patient. He does have power. He's good defensively. There's a lot to like here because he's a catcher. And again, you're not drafting for team need, but Ryan Jeffers is kind of, we talked about Jeffers earlier as a catcher who developed defensively, but Jeffers is going to be out of contract before too long. You know, they don't really have a whole lot of long-term catching plans there. Stevenson could kind of fit that, could fix that, and to get him at 36, I feel like you're getting a guy who you really could hope on could be a big leaguer for you down the road.
Yeah, no questions about the defense, chance to be a plus defender, plus arm strength. Scouts rave about the makeup and just baseball IQ and just general competitiveness. To your point, he's a very selective hitter. Maybe too passive at times, but it has led to just generally really strong walk rates. So maybe that's your kind of saving grace offensively, is he could always be this guy who's just going to find a way to get on base and then hit for power. Most catchers in the majors have power these days, it feels like. It feels like the Bodine hitterish example is maybe more rare than a low average profile. Power. Yeah. Cool. Okay. We got the Rays and Jeff at 37.
So I was trying to find like the most upsidey sort of like it was either between an upsidey athletic tooled up high school player on the position side, or it was an injured pitcher. So if I can scoop somebody a little bit, my options kind of here in my head were Riley Quick with the turbo sinker and a really good slider and some arm issue injury issues, having had Tommy John surgery a year ago, kind of fits into like what the Rays like. But ultimately, the guy that I've heard the most buzz about since coming out of the combine is Dax Kilby out of the Georgia prep ranks, shortstop, kind of a super athlete. You know, we saw last year and the year before the Rays take a guy like this sort of early in the draft. A couple years ago, it was Santana, who didn't necessarily have the full athleticism, but was a great runner. And then last year, of course, their first pick in Theo Gillian. So I kind of think it kind of fits into there. And I don't think it would be shocking to see Kilby, just based on some of the athletic testing and some of the data that's come through recently, some of the helium that he has, that he ends up going in the third.
And you're getting, compared to Santana, you're getting a much more physical, much more advanced offensive player. Like, he's not the, he's not the sort of slickest defender that Santana was, but I think it's just, you could have solid tools across the board with Kilby. And to your point, there's like a lot you can still dream on with him filling out that really big, impressive, lean frame that he has. And I have heard a lot of buzz on him kind of starting in this comp range. And the Rays have been tied to, feels like, every high school shortstop on our board in like the 30 to 100 range. So this would make sense to me.
Plus, I'm here to be the wild card. So I play my role with my last pick. You know?
Yeah. So Kilby, in terms of BA ranking, 75, that's the lowest ranked player. But again, I think it fits here. So once we get into this range, really try and open up in your mind, like, what makes sense from a ranking range? Because all these players are very similar on talent at this point.
Well, it was the lowest ranked player for one pick because I'm going to snag another guy that's had a ton of helium and a ton of buzz. And
I know who you're getting. Can I pick? Can I guess who you're taking?
You're going to just name my pick, so go for it.
Josh Owens.
I am. I'm going to take prep shortstop Josh Owens out of Providence Academy. In Tennessee. He's been a prominent prep riser. There's a big fat up arrow next to his name, and it's been that way for some time now, especially coming out of the combine where he showed well. I think he posted a BPV of 108, but 6'3", 185 pounds, great body, ton of room to fill out further. He's an excellent athlete. Played football in high school. His dad was an eighth round pick, played 10 seasons in the minor leagues. He does a lot of things well. It's kind of a bevy of average to above average tools right now with upside remaining. He's got solid bat to ball skills. It's a really clean swing from the left side. I think there's plus power potential in there with Owens, and I don't think it's all too unrealistic. He eventually achieves that. Currently a shortstop, he lacks, this like twitchiness, I'll say, and the actions and hands, I think, need a coat or two of polish. But, I think if he were to stick on the dirt, third base is most likely home, or the plus arm would translate. But he also runs well enough and is athletic enough to potentially handle an outfield spot where you could just let him run around and go after baseballs, and the arm strength would play. So, I really, really like him now. I really like him for what he could look like in 2, 3, 4 years. I think he is a potential monster.
All right. Well, it feels like we've reached the point where we're taking shots on guys, our final picks. We want to get excited about our last player. I'm going to follow suit. I'm going to go a little bit down the board. I'm between a few high school players. High school shortstops like Ryan Mitchell and Coy James are exciting to me. Quentin Young's physical tool set is exciting to me. I'm really tempted to take Angel Cervantes, who maybe is the best pure pitcher on the board available here, who would be fun. But and Peter mentioned our recent draft podcast, talked about him a lot in our last one. Landon Harmon is just a pitcher I love. I think he's got tremendous arm speed, a chance to develop a double plus fastball. He's been up to 98 miles per hour, and it looks like he's playing catch when he gets there. I think he's got a chance to develop an above average or better breaking ball. He's flashed it now, not super consistent at the moment. Great pitcher's frame, 6'4", 6'5", really lean, tons of strength to pack on there. Again, I think there are some pieces he's going to need to refine. The strikes could be a little bit more consistent, but in terms of like just pure arm talent upside, I'm taking a shot on Landon Harmon here for the Yankees.
Okay. I'm going a little bit wild too. I'm picking for the Dodgers here. You can question whether it's a wise approach, considering that the Dodgers do seem to get hit by in pitching injuries more than anyone. But I'm going to embrace that. And I'm going to take upside here. They're the Dodgers. So Cam Leiter, you are taken at pick 40.
I thought about taking him as well. Love it.
So obviously Cam Leiter, there's a big kind of if here, which is when you say, well, how did Cam Leiter look this year? And it's like, he hasn't, he's one of those guys. We've seen a couple of these over the years. The pitcher who isn't ready to pitch. Reggie Crawford, one that kind of is a cautionary tale, considering that as Josh Norris likes to note, I think that Josh Norris has seen Reggie Crawford pitch 3 times as a pro. And that means that he's seen half of Reggie Crawford's pro appearances, I believe. Yeah.
Jeff and I saw his best outing maybe ever on the Cape, I think, together, potentially. Mm-hmm. I don't know, though.
Which was his one outing on the Cape, I believe, wasn't it?
Probably.
Yeah, he was up to 100 on the fastball with movement, and then it was like a 2,900 yacker of a breaking ball. Goofy stuff.
So back to Cam Leiter, JJ. I mean, one in terms of pitch grades, one of the more exciting arms we have graded out in the class, but obviously the big risk factors. What do you like about him outside of just like the arm talent is really exciting?
So what you're really trying to do here, I would say, what you 100% are doing is, look, I'm getting a player at this position, at this pick, who, if everything had gone right, there's no way he's available at this pick. So if I'm looking at this, I'm on the Dodgers, I would kind of basically make the point that I'm accepting risk, but by accepting the risk, let me just pose it this way to Peter and Carlos, to you guys. A healthy Cam Leiter, let's just say that he has a Cade Horton. I'm not saying a run in the postseason, but if Cam Leiter was able to pitch in May and June and look like this is the Cam Leiter we saw before the injury, he would be what? Mid first rounder?
On talent, I think pretty easily top 30, but the medical, how much of the shoulder it is, like that, again, hard for us to say from the outside looking in what teams are going to do with that medically. But in terms of arm talent, yeah, absolutely. I would say top 30.
Yeah, talent and stuff. First rounder, if he.
I mean, when we were doing our pitch, like our best pitching tools in the preseason, I think we considered Cam Leiter for fastball, slider, and curveball. So,
yeah.
So
it's loud.
So again, I think that this is just a pick. You're not picking till pick 40, and to come away with it. If you wanted me to give you, okay, so what's the Dodgers example of this? It's Walker Buehler, mm-hmm. right? Walker yep. Buehler was a guy who, when they drafted him, it's like, oh, they're taking a guy who's hurt. And their viewpoint was, we're taking a guy who has more talent than everyone picked around him. And that ended up being true.
Right. And on draft day, the Dodgers are picking here at 40 and 41. So even if they like, they could take a huge risk on someone and they could back it up with maybe a much more safe profile, like Ethan Petrie is sitting here on the board, feels like a classically like safe offensive performer, college 3 years. Like the way they like balance these picks, or maybe they just do double down on high upside. The Dodgers have the talent and the big league team to be able to do that, but it'll be interesting.
But you also probably just pricing wise, you know, bonus pool wise, because mm-hmm. they don't pick till pick 40. If you go with Leiter, who you're probably, if I'm Cam Leiter, I'm not taking a massive discount because I was hurt. I know what my talent is. Do you maybe need then to kind of take at 41, someone who's probably a little bit less of a bonus pool ask?
Mm. I'm not sure. I think I would be surprised if Cam Leiter at, I mean, again, he knows the town better than me, but at 40, I wouldn't think you're doing an overslot deal for him here. So I would imagine you could save it. There's a chance that Cam Leiter's on the board in second or third round. So
yeah, that's fair.
The Dodgers here have about $9 million to spend, so they're not at the very bottom, but in the bottom third. Okay, so that wraps up our staff draft for today. 40 picks in, best available players not taken. Riley Quick, Max Ballou, Ethan Petrie, Dean Curley, Zach Root are all the top 40 players we had that didn't go. Any final thoughts, things that surprised you, things that maybe stood out as we were working on the board, questions about the class? Like, what do you guys think after we have this resolved? And maybe we can, after we give our general comments, we can also do one pick that you really liked that was not yours. But I'll start with Jeff. Let's start with you.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that we kind of saw in this draft is kind of how flux it is from like 1 to 12 mm-hmm. Or even 11. It just feels like there's a lot, like a group of players, you know, 11 or 12 players that are all sort of in the mix for the top five picks, maybe some guys more so than others. And I think that kind of played out a little bit here. I'm sure if we changed it and picked a handful of other folks that follow the draft, you know, closely, we probably would have ended up with, you know, a different order in the top mm-hmm. five or six. And I think yep. that's one of the interesting things about this draft, that it resembles 2021 in the sense that there really does feel like there's no true sort of top three players in this class.
Yep. Peter, how about you?
Yeah, how many different directions this thing could go stands out. I think that was a good initial point by Jeff. Like, there are players that weren't selected in our iteration of the staff draft who I know I was considering and heavily considering at a couple of different junctures, as I'm sure the same applies to you guys. It'll be interesting to see if the slide of a handful of these players is at all a harbinger of what's going to happen on draft night. Inevitably there will be guys that slide a little bit, guys that go in a more prominent spot than expected, but I'm curious if, you know, the who that slid in our staff draft applies or carries over mm-hmm. to night one.
And JJ,
could I ask that, Carlos, like, if you looking at it, you do our mocks, who are the guys who slid the most who you're like, no, that could, like we said with Billy Carlson, like he slid to 15, but you all made a point that like, we don't feel like in real life, he's probably not going to slide like that.
Yeah.
Who are the players who slid, who you're like, okay, that player went well below where we have him slotted, but it wouldn't be a shock if that happened.
Yeah. Billy is the first one. Honestly, there's not a ton of other names that really stand out to me. Like Andrew Fisher maybe is one, although this range feels appropriate given some of the defensive profile limitations. I think his Andrew Fisher's activity will start a lot higher. Luke Stevenson stands out as maybe another who just, I know there are potential landing spots for him in the 15 to 20 range. That doesn't mean he's definitely going to go there. So I don't think really there are any outside of maybe Billy Carlson that stand out as like, oh, he's definitely going much higher than this on draft day. Maybe some of the ones that stand out that went a little higher in our draft that I would expect on draft day, Gage Wood, just because of the medical uncertainty. Alex Lodice, I think, belongs where JJ took him, but I just don't hear his name as much as I would expect to for a college shortstop with that sort of performance. Other than that, I think it fits with what I've been hearing, which maybe is always going to be the case for something like this for us. But how about we go through and say, what's your favorite pick in this draft that you didn't make, if anything stands out, whether it's just a player you really liked and wanted or value that you really liked and wanted. I'll go here and pick out one. The one that hurt me the most was JoJo Parker from Peter. He took him 6th overall with the Pirates. I mean, I guess I basically had to have taken JoJo at 3 if I really wanted him and to do the 3-for-3 and all the staff drafts, but I really like JoJo's hitting ability, his power. I would have taken him at 7 if he was available there. So that's one that maybe stands out to me. Let's go to you next, Peter.
I loved JJ's Caden Bodine pick. That was a guy that I selfishly really, really wanted.
And he went
24th
to the Tigers.
24th to the Tigers. Jeff also picked my pocket twice. I really liked Vahevo Aloy at 17, and I'm with him that I think it's a realistic one. Los at 19 with Ethan Conrad to the Orioles, I liked a lot as well. So I think that's actually one for everyone on this call.
Nice. But, nice guy, Peter.
No, there were a number of good picks. And then Bremner at 5 is a really interesting one.
Oh, that was a good one too. Yeah, I like that
one. Yeah, so no, there were the
other one that I really liked too, and I liked it more the more he kept explaining it, was Ike Irish at 13. I liked that one a lot from Jeff. Yes. But Jeff, we'll go to you. Which picks did you like?
Yeah, Steele Hall is my favorite player in the class, I think. I think there's a ton of upside. He's the best tester of all the high school guys. Over the last few years where, you know, we've been tipped off on some of the athletic testing, more often than not, those guys kind of outperform their draft pedigree. So I think there's some upside there. I think it would be a really fun pick with the Twins, too. You kind of have this group of really fun position players. Hopefully Steele Hall will be the one that stays healthy all throughout. And then the other pick I really like was Gavin Kylan. I would say pound for pound, just in terms of the overall profile, he's my favorite college hitter in the class.
Yeah.
And Peter mentioned a little bit about the improvements in approach. It's not just the fact that he's chasing significantly less. He went from a 37% chase rate at Louisville as a sophomore to like a 23-24% chase rate with Tennessee in the SEC. That tells me a lot. The great part of it, though, is he didn't lose any of the heart swing and his aggressiveness in the zone, which with a hitter like him is really something I want to see. It's still like an 85% heart swing and like 90% zone swing. If you throw the ball down the middle of the plate, Gavin Kylan is going to hit it. And the thing that he's shown this year is he's got a chance to hit it out of the park, which is not necessarily the player we saw in Louisville. He's just such a great combination of like 70 approach, 60 bat to ball skills, and like 50 power with like 55 angles. He just kind of checks all the boxes. And I think he's a guy that's going to be a really successful college hitter. Wouldn't be all that different from kind of the success that we've seen from similar profiles, maybe a Luke Kuechel or somebody like that. So I think Kyle could be a really good pro player.
And he's another one maybe that I'll just mention. It's not too far off the range, but at 22, I think he has so many potential landing spots in the 10 to 20 range. All those analytically inclined teams starting with the Rays and Red Sox, 14 and 15, maybe more so the Red Sox. I think he's got a lot of potential landing spots. JJ, how about you?
The one that really stood out to me was when I was picking for the Blue Jays at 8, I was kind of bummed that you took Jamie Arnold at 7. Really, because I thought that was a really good fit for them. Like, I kind of thought like that a college starter fit for the Blue Jays really well with that pick. But in an ideal world, I think that Jamie Arnold fits better for them, because I do think that if you draft Jamie Arnold, you literally would be like, okay, he fills one of our starting pitching spots for 2026. I think that Doyle may have a little bit higher upside if everything pops, but Arnold is much more of the guy who you're like, you're drafting him and then you're just saying, yeah, we're writing him in, barring injury. We're writing him into our rotation for next year, which means that then we can do other things, free agency. We can do other things with trades. And it's a lot of value for a team that is going to try to contend next year.
Cool. All right. Unless you guys have any other final comments, I think that's going to wrap it for us today. Let us know whose team you preferred. We all have 10 different players we picked. Maybe let us know what picks you really liked. If we took a player for your favorite team that you really hate, let us know too. Feel free to beat us up. That's fine. JJ, what are you going to say?
I was just going to say along those lines, tell us, if you like what we took for your team or if you hate it, we want to know.
Yeah. And outside of that, just tons of other draft coverage on the site to look forward to, on the podcast, on the website. I know the pro team has been really busy on the updates for the top 30s, top 100, super busy time of year. Really excited for the draft. We're very close now. This is our final staff draft of the year, the official closer that we'll be returning to in future years to see who did well and who messed up.
I was going to say, that's the piece that we have to come up with soon, is to show how our staff drafts from last year's, who did best.
Jeff's from last year is pretty fun. I'll say that. But yeah, we'll do that. Cool. For Peter, for Jeff, for JJ, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody.